Well, thank you, Linda, for being with us.
My pleasure.
For those of you who don't know, Linda's also the one who coordinates our Bread and Roses Coffee House and finds us these wonderful musicians to play. And
All my friends.
All your friends. And there's always a lot of logistics to that, so Linda's always working on that, so thank you.
You're so welcome. My pleasure.
So in terms of this experience, this story we were talking about, when we talked the beginning of the week to start our kind of deliberations, I told Linda that Tora and I had been up in Vermont. We spent a night in Weston, Vermont, at a little bed and breakfast, and I went running in the morning and just by this little stream, just a beautiful, beautiful space. And I told that to Linda, and then she told me that that was where her good friend Rich was buried, who died at the age of 34, when she was a bit younger as well.
I was 30.
30. And that Rich had cancer and had anticipated his death. He knew it was coming for a couple of years. And when it was getting close, he went and bought himself a simple pine box. And with Linda's help, maybe some others, they basically decorated it, polyurethaned it, and put all kinds of symbols on it as he got prepared for his death.
Yep.
And I thought that, and he's buried there in Weston, Vermont, this little town of 450 people. And then about that point, Linda said to me, "And so what's our topic for Sunday?" And I said, "Well, it's this Emmaus Road story." And then Linda kind of startled, because she said that she and Rich had spent a number of years together doing Emmaus ministries in the Catholic Church, I think in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire, we created we were part of a group that created a retreat house that served teenagers that were about to be confirmed. And we called it Emmaus House.
So when we, you know, so we've been to Weston, he's buried in Weston, and he'd done Emmaus things. So
Rich never would have come up.
Never would have come, it wasn't part of the plan, but it seemed like he was inserting himself into the sermon, because here were this little kind of serendipity kind of thing. So Linda, would you tell us,
that so much.
So as a way to prepare us to talk about this biblical story, would you tell us a little bit more about Rich? And who was this person who got his own casket and decorated it, which is not a typical thing to do.
He was an unusual guy. He was a very devout Christian, and he thought about being a priest, and he thought about being a monk, but he decided that the best way he could serve was in lay ministry, which he did for all his life. And when I met him, he was doing that, and we were friends. We became friends. But then he was diagnosed with cancer, lung cancer that metastasized to his brain. And that was in 1978 or 79. And he had an operation on his brain to remove that tumor. The one in his lung was not operable. And the day of his surgery, the day before, everybody he knew, like a lot of people, came to his hospital room to tell him how much they cared for him and they loved him, and every person said that to him with a tear in their eye, and because he was given a 50-50 chance of pulling through the operation. And he said afterwards, he did get through the operation, and he said afterwards, "It was so lovely that everybody did that, but wouldn't it be even lovelier if we all did that all the time?" That it didn't take impending death to tell each other how much we cared for each other and how much we meant to each other and that we loved each other. And so then Rich and I became closer friends after that, because he really needed help with all that he needed to do. There were several people that helped him, and I was one of them. And he decided that death was really part of life, and he wanted to, as a Christian, face death in a Christian way and be very conscious about how he did that. So then he went out and found a place that made just really simple, unfinished pine boxes. And he and our friend Paul went to Connecticut and picked it up, my saw them coming back with this thing sticking out the back of the station wagon. And we unloaded it at Emmaus' house and put it in a room in Emmaus' house. And Rich and I finished it. We polyurethaned it. We decoupaged it. We put a rainbow on the lid. I was the first one in it. And we cried and we laughed and we talked and we became very close friends. And he's been with me ever since he died in 1981. And he's still with me. I can feel him right now.
Well, he certainly seemed to insert himself into our our reflections right there from the beginning. Yes.
We mentioned Weston, and
yes,
he wanted to become.
And you also said there was a biblical quote he put on the top of his coffin.
From Micah I think the wording he had was to live justly, to love tenderly, to walk humbly with my God.
Yes.
And that was his quote that he loved
yes.
so much and
yes.
that he tried to live up to and did a great job, I think.
And in a way, here he is still with you.
He is still with me.
Yeah, he certainly, yeah.
Every time I play the song that I wrote him a few songs.
And but, you should be sure to tell us what happened the night that he died.
Yeah, well, he asked me to play at his funeral, which I wasn't too wild about. Didn't seem like that would be a particularly easy thing to do, but he asked me to, and I said okay, and I said, well, what do you want me to play? And he had a song that he'd written that he wanted me to play. He was a musician also. He played guitar and sang and wrote songs, and so I played that, and he wanted me to play another one that I had written and something else, and then he said, other than that, you'll know. Well, I'm like, okay. The night that he died, I was living in Nantucket at the time. I was a big windstorm that night, and I just couldn't sleep. I was thinking about him and feeling sad. And so finally I got up because I couldn't sleep, and I picked up my guitar, and this song came through. I did, and it's the only time in my life that ever happened to me that a song just came through. It came words, melody, chords, everything. I just played it. And after I played it, I wrote it down. And that was the song, that was the extra song that I played at his funeral. And I don't remember it, sorry to say, but I probably would if I saw the lyrics. I meant to dig them out, but.
But it was for that moment.
It was for that moment, yeah.
Yes. And this mystery of life and death and being part of something larger. But in honor of maybe that song, would you play the song, the words that are on,
yeah.
over and over, which the words are on the back of the program, because it's such a wonderful poem and such a wonderful song.
When I arrived for his funeral, for his wake, he waked. I remember standing by his coffin and putting my hand on his hand, feeling a coldness of it, and thinking, what is it that makes my hand warm that it's not there in his body anymore? What is that? It was a profound moment. So this is a song that I have played so many times, and it's one of my favorite songs that I've written, actually. I wrote it after his operation, and had a lot to do with what he had said about telling people how you feel. And I still think of him every time I play it. Thank you. before cell phones.
Think of the line in the Gospel of John where Jesus says, I no longer call you disciples, I call you friends.
Oh, that's lovely. You would like that.
Yes, and maybe Jesus all through time is over and over again telling us we are friends. Yeah.
We made a little film after I wrote that song, and that was that song figured kind of prominently in the little film, which was really a slideshow of. And he talked about his process with the coffin and everything. I'm gonna get that somehow digitized because I have it on VHS right now.
I bet there might be some folks who maybe could help with that.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, maybe.
Anybody? Yep. But I figured my assignment, having talked about this back Monday or Tuesday, whenever it was what's the tie-in with the actual story of Emmaus? And so here's my reflections on that one, and we'll have some more conversation. But basically, in the story, it doesn't just go to the resurrection real quick, you know. The grief and the sadness of the death is there. They are trudging out of Jerusalem. these two disciples and the sense of despair, the sense of hopelessness, the awareness, what you might call the biological awareness, that death is final, that Jesus is dead and gone. You know, because that's what we are. We're creatures who live and die. And then there was the psychological awareness that they had, that Jesus being dead also meant a lot of other things had now died. Their hopes for Israel being freed, their hopes for change and possibility had all been destroyed, stomped on by the power of Rome. And so both biologically and psychologically, they had a sense of hopelessness. We all experience that kind of thing. And so as a result, we tend not to want to deal with death. We put it off as far as we can, which explains why you don't see station wagons or SUVs with coffins sticking out the back, you know? We don't. I mean, it sounds morbid initially. Like, what kind of a crazy guy would do such? But then when you put it in a context of someone honestly facing death, it's a whole lot like our story, where they're honestly facing death in those opening verses of Jesus is gone, these people are depressed, despairing, hopeless, and that's an experience we all have at moments. When we get a diagnosis, when somebody beloved suddenly dies, when something in the world happens, boom, down and we're flattened. And then the stranger comes, and things suddenly shift. Which when you were telling me about Rich, I could hear some of that in your voice. Of this wasn't just a friend from long ago. This was somehow still a companion to you now. Which I suspect all the people we meet are in a way, but certain people just stand out. And when you started describing this character, it was kind of clear why. You know, you'd shared in ministry together, you'd done the Emmaus retreats together, you'd walked with him through his dying, and he'd done his dying in a very intentional, faithful way, even to inscribing on his coffin those wonderful words from the prophet Micah. And it just got me thinking about how do you understand the resurrection? You know, you can sort of say, well, do you believe in it or not? Kind of, you know, and if you do, you're a Christian. If you're not, well, you're not. But really, it's supposed to be something that gets into us. And it clearly got into Rich because it enabled him to face death, to face the hopelessness, which is what Jesus, the risen Jesus, did with these two disciples. As he came and they made space for him, they were being hospitable to him, letting him walk with them. But they were also a little puzzled by, are you the only one in Jerusalem that doesn't know what's happened? Why aren't you hopeless? And then he begins to unpack the story and saying, don't you understand how the Messiah, how God had to take all the suffering on to God's self in order to transform death into life? And he interpreted the whole of the prophets and the law and the Psalms. And as you said yesterday when we met, that's the Bible study we all want to be in someday. And they got to be in that Bible study. And then in the breaking of bread, in that communion, in that loving one another over and over again beyond words, in that communion, they saw who it was. And then he vanished. Then he's gone. Sort of the way Rich is gone. So it's the way others are gone, and yet there are certain people that stay with us, which gives to me the sense of this is sort of on the trail of the resurrection. You know, we can't figure out with our minds what the resurrection is, but we have these experiences, encounters with strangers, with loved ones that change us in some way, that stays with us, and that's some of that fragrance of the resurrection, I think. What do you think?
Rich very, very much believed in the resurrection and was certain that death was not the end for him. And that was very inspiring to me. It was really my first encounter as an adult with death. And so I was really curious and wanting to face it in a direct way also. So he was perfect for me, as well as me helping him. He helped me, and he still helps me. And I remember when he died, I wasn't with him when he died, but some friends were with him, and they said it was like he was climbing a hill His breathing was labored, and he was struggling to go up the hill. But then he got to the top of the hill, and he stopped breathing, but he just kept going. I remember them saying that. And one more thing too. I see you have a rainbow.
Yes, a little rainbow. Yep.
And that was one of our programs that we did was called Rainbow, and there's another tie-in. I mean, it's all to me. This is all so. Everything is woven together so beautifully in our world and in our consciousness that Joel mentioned Weston, and that brought up the whole subject of Rich. He had a rainbow Afghan that was crocheted for him that is with him in the coffin. So
beautiful, beautiful. My gosh. So here's my image for what's going on in this story and what goes on when we listen to some of Linda's music or other music or sing our hymns or share in worship. We are indeed biological creatures who live and die, and it's like that's the surface of the pond. Like you're sitting here in front of a pond and you're looking at the surface and it's all smooth and clear, and that's the surface. That's kind of the given. And then the psychology of it is, you look into the pond and you can see other dynamics going, such as like in this story of the death of Jesus meant the end of hope for this community that he was part of. And we're aware of our own deaths. I mean, that's why we don't have coffins around in our house, because we don't want to think about these things. So there's these shadows and dark. And then there's people that we do have hopes in and dreams that will change the world. And so we look in the pond and we see all these kind of images. But we're more than biology and we're more than psychology. If you dive into the pond, into the deep places, it opens out into this world of consciousness, into this world of connection, the places beyond words that is mysterious, like a stranger walking with you. And I think we've all had experiences like this of an encounter, a stranger, an experience, and it's like, oh, there's more here than I realized. And it's sort of the curse and blessing of being a human being that we can kind of see the biology and experience the psychology, and then if we are intentional enough, we can dive into something more. But it kind of takes a certain amount of work, and we get ourselves spooked, and we don't want to deal with this and this, and then people misbehave on massive scales because we run away from things. And then in the middle of all that, Jesus dies on a cross, people misbehaving big time, and then he rises from the dead, and then he keeps showing up. Like Rich, or like if you were here for the service for Ralph Sanfloni, his wonderful near-death experience when he for a moment died from his hernia operation or hernia time back 9 years ago, and he was, as he said later, when he woke up, he said, "I was in Italy, and there was a great banquet spread for me, and I was ready to sit down and partake, and then this little old man comes walking up to him and says, 'No, not you. You have to go back.'" And so he came back for 9 years to be with us. But it was clear to all of us gathered, we all know where Ralph is now. And what is all that? You know, we're not just making this stuff up. It may be metaphor and imagery, and you can't take it literally. It's not a mind thing. It's a heart thing.
Yeah, and you really can't grasp it with your hand.
Right. But we grasp it with music. In those tones that take us to deep, in our hearts, take us to deep places. And from our conversation, I was thinking of this quote from St. Francis of Assisi, who used as one of his prayer mantras, "O God, who are you? And who am I? O God, who are you? And who am I?" This sort of made me think of Rich, or Ralph, or other beloved souls. And so if we're more than we realize, then even like in that opening quote, when we feel like doom has come upon us, there's still this love's unwavering flame shining in here and between us that can lead us on. And I suspect you've got a song that could respond to something like that.
Suspect.
Why don't we?
A couple of different.
Well, you have some words too, but time for a song. Enough of Joel's talking.
Awesome.
Turn this off.
I'll do this one. what is the point anyway? Is the caring worth the cost? And where will I find the strength to pay? Questions, years in the making, balancing life's giving with life's taking. As I watch friends die and devils thrive. Questions, years in the making, balancing life's giving with life's taking, black and white.
Well, thank you, Linda. And I knew this would happen. Time goes by too fast.